This episode of the Book of Very, Very Bad Things podcast has been brought to you by our sponsors at Sweet Cheetah Publicity. Sweet Cheetah is a PR collective that values people over profit. They put a different spin on public relations by working primarily with friends and using all profits to aid charitable organizations. With a roster that includes Jawbox, The New Amsterdams, Brainiac, Get Some, Funeral Date, Damian Dunn, and many more artists, record labels, and podcasts. Sweet Cheetah, that's a great PR cohort. You can find them on social media by simply searching Sweet Cheetah PR, and they'll be there. He's been Tim, I've been Peter, and Sweet Cheetah has been beautiful. And I still would. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Book of Very, Very Bad Things podcast. I'm your host, Peter, and I am still here. And tonight, I bring to you Chuck French of Get Some. Chuck has served time in a great many amazing bands. He's been in Cloak of Organs, Peralta, The Incredible, Planes Mistaken for Stars, Woven Hand, and of course, Get Some. I would like to dedicate this episode tonight to the memories of Garrett O'Donnell from Planes Mistaken for Stars and Ordy Garrison from Woven Hand. If the impressive list of artists that Chuck French has played with doesn't give you the notion that he is a multifaceted and malleable musician, I don't know what'll convince you other than just by listening. Tonight we cover a lot of territory, mostly concerning the reformation and reignition of Get Some, their new album, which is entitled New Blood. We discuss what it is that excites him about music, what gets him off about being a musician, about, you know, the minutiae of what it takes to be in a working band. We get into some deeper subjects as well, as this show is bound to do. And most of all, we kind of get a feel for who one another really are, which is also kind of what this show is all about. If you like this show, if you want your friends to know about it, word of mouth is always best. So please like, rate, subscribe, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on social media, either Facebook or Instagram. And, you know, let your friends know about us, because the more listeners we get, the more inclined we'll be to make more content just like this. As long as you keep asking for it, I will keep making it for you. The journey that lies before us is a solid 1 hour conversation between two disciples of the Church of Music, in which we exalt the virtues of the recorded instrumentation and execution of rock and roll. So without further ado, I give to you Chuck French of Get Some on the Book of Very, Very Bad Things podcast.
Awesome.
Man, I'm sorry about your friend. That's fucking terrible. It's a thing that sadly continues to occur throughout the length and breadth of my life. It doesn't get easier, but fuck, man, you know, there's so much to enjoy in life and we're here to keep them alive. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, totally.
So let's start out with the fact that this gets on record is like, it's as if Jane's addiction had happened to be 100 times heavier and almost more psychedelic. There was a big break in between albums for you guys, and obviously you're a busy man. You have Woven Hand and everything else going. What sparked the reignition of Get Some?
Some of the songs we had written in like 2014, not long after we all got arrested on tour in Missouri in 2012, on our way to meet Converge. And after that, that was kind of like the end of that lineup. Well, our drummer was like, he had to go, and it was totally cool. But we got a new drummer, and then life kind of just got in the way, you know? Like, we had a handful of songs, and we got Dylan to play drums with us, and we would get together and play locally occasionally. But eventually we just kind of, you know, we all got together and everybody was there and healthy, and we fucking banged out a bunch of shit that we had kicking around and wrote some new shit as well, and recorded it before the pandemic started. And then, you know, then that fucking thing happened and really just fucked everything up. And then we finally finished it all, it took another like year and a half to even see it on, you know, a copy of it, you know, so it's been a long time.
And the thing is like that extended lead time, you know, do you lose excitement for this new thing that you have like sitting collecting dust, or is it just like, you know,
no, I'm really excited about it because I want to play the songs, you know, with my friends.
Yeah, absolutely. So
going tour.
How do you find time to, like, you know, juggle projects at this point in your life?
It's always, you know, fucking feast or famine, dude. You know, like one minute you're like engulfed in it, and the next minute you're like, you don't have it around at all. You know, it's just you're in a desert. So you kind of just gotta like chase the dragon's tail constantly, you know, or like wrestle it so you don't get your fucking head bit off.
Yeah, absolutely. So your love of different styles of music. I mean, when you look over, like you've been in six different bands that are six different sounds, you know, where did your love of music kind of start in your youth? Like what was it that really bit you first?
Led Zeppelin, man, you know. Yeah. My mom was real young when she had me, so she was like listening to like Led Zeppelin, and the babysitters that she got like were just like teenagers, you know, in the 70s. So like Led Zeppelin was the shit, you know. It was like kind of scary and like exciting, kind of like Jane's Addiction, or kind of like, you know, when I was watching Planes Mistaken for Stars the first time I saw those guys play, I was like, holy fuck, man.
Yeah.
With Woven Hand too. They had that same vibe. It was like, this is terrifying and like fucking exciting too at the same time, you know?
Mystical.
Yeah.
I mean, so like you obviously probably started with like Zeppelin 4 or something like that, just like everyone else did, I'm sure. But
yeah,
you know, there's, once you get into like Physical Graffiti, and really start digging around and getting past the hits.
You know
what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
There's so much, there's so many different facets to that band. I mean, they even tried to do like a punk post-punk record at one point with, it was Coda, I believe.
Yeah, their record. I love that one.
I love that album too. But like, you can conceivably start six different bands with six different sounds just based on stuff that Led Zeppelin did.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so, that'd be cool.
It'd be excellent. I mean, and Coalesce showed us that it can be updated for a more brutal sound. So how did you get from Led Zeppelin to the music that, you know, you currently make? Where were the gateway drugs along the way?
Skateboarding, Thrasher magazine, those skate rock compilation.
Oh yeah.
Tapes. My friend had the volume 2 and he let me borrow it, and I had Suicidal Tendencies was like one of the first shows I saw in Boston, and it was fucking crazy, you know. It was like, this is awesome, man. It's like, there's one of those things again, scary as hell, because we're like in eighth grade, you know, but like, we don't want to leave because this is fucking awesome. You know, it's like, there's something about it that you just can't leave, but it's like terrifying because you might get your ass kicked at any second, you know?
But the thing is though, you'd never like, I don't think you ever really just adhered to like that sound, like a hardcore punk sound in anything you did. There was always that something extra in all of your bands that sort of set them apart. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right on.
Well, what was like the chemistry like that kind of pushed away those like average, like, oh, we're going to sound like, you know, 7 Seconds. We're going to sound like The Accused.
Well, it always starts like that, but it doesn't, like, you can't really, you know, when we started to get some, we were like, we want to sound like Angel Hair, you know?
Yeah. Oh God.
It didn't. The vibe, you know, I think the vibe is more important than, you know, attitude's everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why, like, people that are like shitty musicians are like amazing, you know, hardcore drummers, or like, you know, just like people that just think they don't know how to play are usually like the people that are like, that dude knows what he's doing, you know, or like comes up with the best, coolest shit, you know?
Well, that's because when you put constraints on someone, you know, they have to invent their way around something, like, you know, what was it, The Edge from U2? Doesn't know a damn thing about actually playing the guitar, so he just invented a style, and yeah, you know,
comes up with the coolest fucking stupid little riffs, and you're like, yeah. Oh man, yeah, I've been a band with people like that where you're just like, you know, I spend all day like, or just, you know, you spend all day like practicing these stupid little scales and shit, and then you go to band practice and like, you know, the bandmate guy never plays the guitar and just picks it up and just like plays something that's just so beautiful, you know, or so just like, oh my God, man, what the fuck, you know? Yeah, it's like you're lucky if you get to be in bands with people like that, you know what I mean? I've been really lucky with them, my bandmates.
You have, because looking just at your discography, every single band had, like I said, something very different from what was the usual in the time period in which the band had taken place. But with this record, it really did have something almost unquantifiable about the sound. I listened to the record probably about 25 times in the couple weeks it's been out.
Yeah.
I still can't put my fucking finger on what it is that makes it so utterly appealing. And I think if I figured it out, it would probably ruin the magic. Is there an element of that for you as well?
Not really, because I kind of like know that, you know, it's like almost like you're going into a town, like playing those songs, or like, or going into a house that you know really well, that you helped build, or that you lived in forever, you know? So. Yeah. But like, yeah, I get it, man. It's like, it's all, you know, influences that are like, you know, Suicide or like, you know, Fela Kuti, Miles Davis, and like the Cro-Mags, you know, or like Murphy's Law, or like, you know, that 80s scary punk rock shit that was like scary when you were in eighth grade, you know, but like that kind of vibe is like, you know, always been like something that, you know, it's like you're saying, the James Addiction shit, like those records fucking changed my life, man, and like really taught me a lot about guitar, you know, like I learned so much about playing guitar just playing along with those records. It was just like amazing shit, you know.
Yeah,
it's like, wow, I kind of turned a corner in a way, you know, like just like really studying that music. And that, you know, more, it's more the vibe, the energy, and the fucking, you know, the like intention behind whatever. It's like that shit that they're going for, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like regular note, like guitar notes have that magic, you know what I mean?
But when you take into consideration Jane's Addiction, I remember there was a home video that they'd done. I'm not sure which of the two it had been, but Perry was talking to some guy outside of a show or whatever, and the guy said, well, what's Jane's Addiction sound? If you were to describe your sound, what would it be? He said, Led Zeppelin covering the Bad Brains.
That's fucking sweet. Yeah, there you go.
And that's the callback to Led Zeppelin too, but
good name, man. Yeah.
I mean, it nails it, but it doesn't. It, because like, I think bands, it's not just about the sonics. It's not just about the lyrics or any of that. It really has more to do with the way you feel in a room with a group of people.
Totally.
And being in different bands, that vibe's always different. You know, so has there ever been a point where you were in a with a group of people and it just, that vibe was, you didn't want to be involved with it anymore? It repulsed you in any way?
Oh yeah, man, totally. Yeah, you know, when I was like starting out, you know, like you gotta find people to play with in like whatever, wherever you are. And you know, when I was young, I didn't really know anybody, and so I put up, you know, there's no fucking internet or any of that shit. So I made a flyer and I put it on the wall at like, a, you know, the music store, at the record store. And like, I would get calls from people, you know, and like, go over there and bring my amp and my guitar. And like, you know, it's like dudes learning, you know, people playing like Lynyrd Skynyrd or some shit, or some like weird dudes that are just like making music and it's original, but it's like, you know, not my cup of tea or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, and then eventually, like, if you keep doing it, you know, you get those lines out there, plant those seeds, and someone will bite, man. And I found some pretty cool people that taught me a lot about shit. And, you know, but it's, so, you gotta weed through some crazy people for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I ended up, you know, playing in bands with people that, and this, I think this happens a lot in the punk sphere. You end up with people who don't even know the music, and you're like coaching them on it. Like, oh, I could, my favorite band's Golden Earring, but I mean, I could play this. This sounds easy, but they're never able to keep up. So you're making like mixtapes for this weird bass player that's like one earring and it dangles to here and he's got a mullet. I mean, that's kind of fun. Now that I'm thinking
about it. Yeah, man.
I think every band had that dude in the 80s, especially. Every hardcore band did. There was always like the long-haired dude in like Sick of It All, or, you know, the Cro-Mags. Sometimes that's fun too. I think, I mean, just to look at Get Some, there's a sincere mixed bag of humans within the structure of that band. What sort of like people are involved with you here? Well, if you were to kind of sum up their personalities.
Just people that are really cool and like easy to be around, you know, fun loving rock and rollers mainly.
But to look at you all, it looks like that, you know, mishmash of different sorts of humans. And I think that's appealing to people. And I remember reading, hype about you all when the first record was happening, and people were like, they're Denver's black flag, like just the wildest shit. And then you hear it, and I mean, you could hear the black flag in it, sure, but it always seemed to me like you guys were trying to reach for something else. Could you kind of describe what that something else would be for you?
Just our own, you know, our own sounds, our own place in, you know, this world, you know what I mean? Like making our mark, or cutting our slice of the pie, carving it out, you know what I mean? Whatever you want to call it. Yeah, we're just trying to get our shit out there, and because we think it was good, you know, it's good enough to stands up to anything else. I mean, we have a hell of a good time, so
yeah.
I know people like having a good time, and that's kind of what it's all about, really, you know.
Yeah.
And just going around and, you know, using that to go hang out with our friends, you know, in like different parts of the country and the world, and yeah, it gives us like a reason to live sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's another beautiful thing in life, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Helping people out. Good, like music helps people out a lot.
I think it's more than just helping them out. I think it really, it drives culture, and it drives, you know, like whenever I thought about my own music, I was always trying to reach that like 13-year-old kid in his bedroom who's like just desperately wants to get the fuck out of his own headspace. And, you know, I'm picturing him on headphones, like, or young whomever, whatever, just desperately wanting to get the fuck out of whatever they're in that is hurting them. And when you can reach someone like that, I think you truly have something, you know, it's spiritual at that point.
Yeah, definitely could be considered that for sure. It definitely touches a lot of those same places. And it's like, you know, it's a language that, you know, everybody can speak, you know.
Are there any albums that kind of saved you in that sort of manner?
Definitely like the, you know, that Black Flag first 4 years compilation, really, like that got a lot of time on the Walkman, and all the early Misfits stuff too, you know, like Suicidal Tendencies, the Crucifix record.
Nice.
That fucking record is so good. Another one that like taught me a lot about, you know, music and playing music, you know, playing guitar. And yeah, some of that, you know, just watching that weird like 80s punk movies and shit, and like, yeah, man, Cheech and Chong.
I mean, they wrote an inadvertent punk song with Earache My Eye. I mean, yeah. it's somewhere between Motorhead and the Germs, that song.
Totally. Yeah.
Speaking of punk rock movies, there's a little piece of one right behind your head there.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. Man, I love that movie.
Having watched that at the age I was when it first came out on VHS, that movie felt like it was tailor-made for me. I mean, these dudes are running around with, like, you know, the one guy's got the X logo on the back of his jacket.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, the soundtrack is awesome for that.
45 Grave, Do You Want a Party? I mean,
yeah, totally.
That was my first introduction to Dinah Cancer. I had never heard 45 Grave. I knew all the other stuff at that time, I think, but not 45 Grave, because I hadn't really broached the death rock wall outside of the Misfits and Samhain yet, really.
Rocky Erickson, too, that was my first exposure to him as well, that record.
You know. That's Rocky Erickson's a wormhole.
Yeah, once totally. I had no idea.
Once you scratch that surface and start digging, like, for as a brief of a career as it really was, there was a substantial amount of output and influence there.
Totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you're like what you're doing now will definitely be remembered as that. And so will Plains Mistaken for Stars, because, and it, this might be blasphemy, but your era of that band is, that's when I was really like taken with it. Cause you showed up on Up in Them Guts, right?
Yeah.
That's like the fucking record that really bit me in a big way.
Yeah, on that record, I played bass, actually.
Oh, you played bass on that?
Yep.
To me, the music itself, like, changed when you showed up. I could have sworn you played guitar on that, but...
Yeah, I played the bass on that one. Yeah, that's that was definitely a new direction for Plains with that record. We worked real hard, and it was, like, heavily Afghan Whigs influenced, I feel like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But... Yeah, that was a hell of a fun record to make. It was a real fun one.
But as you go on, I still stand behind that idea of having like a really like Texas shuffle almost, and yeah. not in a Pantera way. Don't get me wrong; it's its own kind of like soulful and it's kind of busy, but not in an overly busy sense.
Yeah.
Do you have like guitar heroes, or are you like the same as me with that, where you have like these certain people that are like your guitar gods?
I don't know about gods, but you know, definitely people that are, you know, I respect, living and dead, you know, many, there's all kinds of shit that are, you know, like big chunks of, why I love music, you know, like ones I mentioned before, like, you know, definitely, you know, David from Jane's Addiction, dude's fucking amazing. Like, he's an amazing guitar player. And David Edwards from Woven Hand is, you know, and Garrett from Plains, mm-hmm. you know, and like, there's, you know, of course, like Jimi Hendrix and
yeah,
Chet Atkins and Les Paul and, you know, all that shit. I mean, there's so much. It's just, there's so many, like, huge ones, you know, like the Hollies, you know what I mean? Like, fucking.
But you're very bluesy. You have a very bluesy approach.
Yeah, that's like, you know, it's like the default, right? Everyone loves the fucking, the blues, and like that, that scale is like, you know, the most popular. Go on the dots, man. Get the box.
Right.
But yeah, it's fucking fun, man.
So do you feel like Get Some's going to continue now? Like, is it something that, you know, in 4 years or whatever, we're going to hear another record and it's...
Yeah, if we can, you know, as long as none of us die, for sure.
Fuck yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I plan on doing it, for sure.
That's a beautiful thing, because... Everyone I know is very excited about this album. It was kind of like a big touch point for a lot of people, because it'd been so long.
Yeah.
You know, and my circle were all massive, like, Woven Hand heads and stuff too. So when the idea that this was going to occur came into being, everyone was like, could you fucking believe this is going to go down?
Yeah. A long time coming, man.
Were you getting a lot of excitement filtered your way?
Yeah. I mean, it's just been sitting so long and just waiting and waiting for it and waiting for it. And finally it was like, you know, on my doorstep, and I was like, fuck yes, you know? Yeah. And I'm really excited. Like, it's the best sounding Get Some record that we've made. And, really stoked on it. I'm like, I'm super happy about it.
How did you find Rad Girlfriend, having come from, you know, Alternative Tentacles, and before that 1 2 3 4 Go, how did you come across that whole camp?
One of the guys in the Raging Nathans, is mutual friends, the drummer Patrick. Mm-hmm. And so we hit him up, and he was like, fuck yeah, I'd love to do it. And Josh is a great fucking guy. He's like really cool. And super into records and rock music and going on tour. And yeah, we have a lot of shit in common, and we were all about it, man. You know, yeah, I don't know if Alternative Tentacles probably would have put it out, but we just like aren't a big enough band, I feel like, to you know, to make any headway on that label. We love Jello and all the people there, but you know, we need a little bit of Josh is cool about getting our shit out to people, and we didn't really get that so much with AT, but they're, you know, they're busy and we're busy too, so it's cool, man. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And I think right now too, Josh's label's having a kind of a big moment, being covered in some, you know, bigger independent magazines and stuff. Like the Nathans alone are really building a lot of steam. And then he got to reissue that Leatherface record, which,
oh good,
he probably sold the hell out of that like in 15 minutes.
Yeah, I love that record.
Cherry Knoll, I remember when it came out originally, and it was like Frankie Stubbs became a god to me in a way. You know, with that gravelly voice. I mean, we wouldn't have had Hot Water Music without Leatherface.
Right.
But absolutely. But I think you're in the right place at the right time now, too, because I think the world is now coming to a place where record labels and that sort of thing don't really matter anymore. It's almost a non-entity. You know what I mean? And you could write your own ticket, and as long as you have someone in the band who has the wherewithal to post shit on, you know, social media on at least a weekly basis, you're going to be okay.
Right. Yeah, totally. I'm really bad at it.
Yeah, I have a podcast and I'm the worst at it. I'm a fucking dinosaur, man. I'm like, I'm going to be 47 years old in like a month. You know, it's
right on.
Not my world anymore. And I accept that. And I'm kind of okay with that. But I do have to say, in my advanced age, the younger people now, I think, are a lot cooler than when we were younger. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot more awareness of, you know, the things that our small groups believed in. I think that's a much broader topic now for the young people, because they're very, I don't want to call it PC, but they're very sensitive to things like animal rights and, you know, anti-racism, anti-homophobia. I mean, we were the weird ones for being like that in the 80s and 90s, you know?
Right.
Now it's commonplace, and I really love watching it, especially having a daughter who's 22 years old, who I didn't even really have to nudge her in that direction. She was just naturally like that.
Right on. Yeah, I'm sure, like, coming up in your environment, that probably helped a lot.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What's your experience been with the younger people now? Are you kind of seeing the same things I am?
There's definitely a lot of cool shit going on. I work at a bookstore that's like a lot of young people go to, and there's like, they have shows in the back, and there's records and comics and coffee, and it's an amazing place. It's a place that I wish I had when I was like, you know, in my 20s, you know, but it's a great place for kids, and there's a lot of cool shit going on. It's just, there's so much information available, you know, all the time. So, it's, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword, isn't it? It's like, it's easy to find shit, but it's also easy to take things for granted. And I guess, you know, that's, people have always been taking things for granted forever, you know? So it's, you know, people are going to keep advancing technologically, and the kids are always going to be, you know, it's just really strange to how everybody is just, you know, attached to their screens all the time, you know. It's interesting to see, you know, like coming from like, you have a house phone, you know, and you have like that super long cable that you got to like go outside.
In the kitchen.
You know.
It was always in the kitchen, too. The only phone in the house was in the kitchen when I was a kid.
Yeah, really long, like, curly cable, and you got to, like, walk all the way, you know.
Yeah.
It's fucking weird. And so that kind of, like, is the generation gap is, like, it's wild, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was, like, in my, you know, when I was 20, there weren't any fucking cool 40-year-old people that I wanted to hang out with. You know what I mean?
No.
Maybe occasionally there might be some, like, really cool dude, but.
Yeah, he was usually the dude I was buying drugs off of. That's about it. I didn't want to hang with him.
Not that I'm, like, saying that I'm a cool dude that 20-year-old kids want to hang out with or by any but, yeah, dude, when we first got Dylan to join the band playing drums, he was, like, 19, you know, and we were, you know, in our 40s, you know what I mean? And he was, like, I couldn't even tell that he was, we could just fucking hang out, you know? It wasn't, like, totally weird like some people, you know, can be, you know? Like, this, you know, some people that is just, like, you're 19 and you're, like, not, you're not in your body yet, kind of, you know what I mean? He's just a really cool, super easy to get along with, very, like, centered and mature kind of guy, man. And he fucking rips on the drums, man. And so, luckily, we got him to hang around long enough to make this record. Now he lives in Oakland.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Is he going to tour with you? Or?
Yeah, he's definitely going to do some touring with us, for sure. We're trying to start getting things in motion for that. Hopefully in the winter we'll get out on the road for a little bit, and then next year do some hit the road, go across the US, maybe to Europe if it's possible.
And in the meantime, you're working in this Many Splendor bookshop. What attracted you to that? Like, are you a big book nerd like myself?
I mean, I love books. Some of my real close friends own the place, and I've been, like, going in there since they opened it. They've been there for, like, 10 years now, and I think I've been working there, like, 8 months now or something like that. So, it's a fucking great place, man. It's really cool.
Yeah, that was basically my childhood. I spent haunting record stores and bookstores, and... You know,
yeah.
I was always in the seediest part of the bookstore with all the horror novels. Fucking looking at shit I shouldn't be looking at. To me, like, there's what punk rock did for me is what horror literature did for me as well. it gave me the same kind of escape. Horror movies did too. And, like, when I was a kid and you were a kid, video stores weren't even happening yet. Like, I, in my very small town, for example, if I wanted to rent a VHS tape, and it was a very novel idea that you could at that point, I had to go to a hardware store that was 5 blocks from my house, and they had a wall of rentals there. It was very, very classic small town, like Americana, Pennsylvania type thing. But, you know, that became a haven, right? Like, just anything with a CD, very elongated clamshell box with gore on the cover, it became my place to hide from the world for 90 minutes or 80 minutes. Was it kind of a similar thing for you?
Yeah, totally. We had cable television came in, and MTV and, like, you know, HBO and shit, all those Cinemax.
Mm-hmm.
That movie was on all the time. There was, like, you know, all the fucking crazy slasher films in the 80s that were on, like, it seemed like they were on, like, 3 times a day.
Yeah.
So we could fucking watch them constantly, you know? But yeah, totally, man. I think
they're intermarried almost, like punk rock and horror and that whole fringe thing. I think you could kind of blame the Misfits and the Ramones for it, but you know, there's always that whole outsider mystique that only spoke to that certain few people. That's what fueled it all. That's what and now it's like,
yeah, I can see it, man. Totally.
It's mainstream now, which is wild. And like you were saying before, it's a double-edged sword because it's available, and ergo people may lose not interest, but it becomes more disposable. That's something I think about a lot, like the death of the album format. People are legitimately pulling back from putting out full-length records because it's like, who's gonna fucking listen to it? You know, it's a singles driven culture right now. But yeah. I really hope I'm wrong. I hope that's not the case, because growing up in the album oriented rock 70s, I couldn't even wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
We were long form record kids. We were even with punk, you got an 18 song 20 minute record. Incredible, but it's still a record. You guys also did a couple 7 inches, but it seemed to me like you guys were always kind of more chasing the grand scope. Am I right there? I mean, it certainly seems so.
Well, we'd put out whatever we could, you know. Whoever wanted to put something out, we'd do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? 7 inch or full length or whatever. You know, whatever the budget would allow. But yeah, I mean, if the first Get Some record I wanted to have, it was, I wanted it to be a double 10 inch vinyl, but the label was like, we can't afford to do that. That's like, that's two records, man, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And I think we cut a couple of songs from it and put those other songs on the next record, you know.
I think that, you know, your music kind of lends itself to something more epic almost, because it has a depth that goes beyond the go. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That whole, you know, we all love Pink Floyd, man, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like those weird tripped out, you know, that psychedelic shit, man. Hawkwind, man.
Oh, yeah. Big. I have Hawkwind bootlegs out the ass.
Nice.
Hawkwind and Chrome, tons of their bootlegs.
Awesome.
But that was a whole other trip. If you were to kind of like break down what your, I don't want to go into like, oh, what's your top 10 favorite records of all time or anything like that. But if you were to break down like what was most pivotal to you, be it, you know, music, film, whatever, the things that like right off the top of your head, what really shaped you culturally?
Shitty 80s cable TV. Alcoholism, drug use. Life and death. And, you know, being able to exist in this really strange place, you know. And just the luck of having to, you know, getting to do all these things, you know, and trying not to take it for granted. But artistically and musically, there's so many things, you know, like, you meet people in your life and you're like, fuck, man, these guys are, you get turned on to some really cool shit. And then, you know, you would get to reflect on it, you know, years later or whatever, but you don't know at the time, right? You get turned on to shit and you're just like, well, okay, this is really cool. But then you don't really know like what kind of an impact that makes on you at the time. You know what I mean? You can sit there and rot and watch fucking, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off like 100 fucking times, or, you know, listen to a Cure record over and over and over again for months, you know what I mean? And you get to know every little sound. But then you put on a record, you know, put on a CD version of it, and you're like, whoa, this is another sound there that I didn't hear. You know, just stupid shit that's like, you know, you see things out in nature and you're like, whoa, I didn't know that thing existed, that, you know, like this fucking butterfly that just blew my mind on the way by or some shit. You know, it's, the world's such a psychedelic place. And music is such a strange thing. It's so funny sometimes, like how, you know, people interpret it completely different than others, man, you know? And it's funny, like how some people love jazz and some people can't listen to it at all, you know? So it's,
no, I don't get that.
It's funny, man, you know? That's just an example, you know what I mean? Or some people love, like, you know, Mongolian fucking throat singing, you know, or I don't know, wherever it's so, you know, culturally, you know, it's like food, man. Food's so fucking different everywhere. It's so strange sometimes. And so is art and music, and like, it can be so fucking mind blowing sometimes, even like made by, you know, made by people that you don't even know, like wouldn't even consider to be, or that don't consider themselves artists or, you know, musicians. Like, that's usually the best shit, man. It's the weirdest, most real stuff, you know what I mean? For me, anything that's real, you know, that has like that, can move you emotionally, you know, that has like something that can grip you, you know, happy or sad, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, visually, musically, anything like that, that's what I gravitate towards, you know?
It seems to me like what you're driving at is like outsider art in general, anything from Salvador Dali to Ornette Coleman to fucking Slayer. Like, as long as it's, you know, it has an austerity of self, like it is exactly what it wants, what it says it is, and it's not contrived, it's not putting flourishes that where they don't need to be, it's just authentic unto itself. That's kind of like, I think, what you're driving at. And I think that's really what you do. I think that's what, like, Get Some is what it says it is. You know, it's exactly itself. And when I'd first alluded to that earlier, like, you know, what you're explaining now, you're doing it. You're not, you know, half-stepping here or trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. You're doing that. And
what we love to do with intentions, you know, intentionally doing something almost like in a ritualistic way, you know?
Yeah.
You try to like achieve something that more than, you know, we're definitely not making money doing this shit. You know what I mean? But it's something that has to be done, you know, regardless. So yeah, we're lucky to be able to do this.
That's where the artists are, right? The true artists are the people who, like, and I hate to say, you know, you sold out if you're making money, because fuck, you'd love to make money off of your music, but you're gonna do it regardless. And you've proven that over a pretty large discography of music. You didn't get rich off of any of it, but you fucking swung on it, man. And, you know, that has to be the reason why we're here, is to celebrate that and applaud that, because you've never been involved in anything that sucked. And I kind of have to tip my hat for that. And you made it this far still having all of your hair, and I applaud that too, because I can't.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a psychedelic place, man.
Yeah. So I guess to kind of like, you know, like rein everything in, if you were to kind of like distill all of the highs and lows, ups and downs, because you're just like me, you've seen the low end of low and the, you know, like, I've been in rehab. I dyed myself once for like three minutes. I was gone. I've been losing people since I was very young because we were all garbage heads. We weren't like the straight edge kids by any stretch. But I'm still here and still doing it. And if you could kind of like wrap all that up, your highs, your lows, the music, the loss, all of it, what is it that legitimately still keeps you swinging for it? And as obviously still so like your spirit still seems to me to be very positive and you exude a lot of light. How do you still do that?
Man, there's so many things to be thankful for, right? In the world, you know. Yeah, there's just so much to be here for, you know, because our time's going to be brief. So live it while you fucking can. Live it live it like you mean it. Yeah. And you got to keep that PMA because, shit, man. And it's not easy, you know, sometimes because shit happens, you know. But, you know, it's all, I don't know, man. I don't know why I keep doing it. It's, you have to do it. I don't know. It's like, what else? Like I don't know what else to do. It's fun to do. I'd rather, you know, be doing this than, you know, trying to make money to survive, you know, to scrap. I have to do that. Everybody has to do that. But, yeah. I don't know, you know, it's like, there's a higher purpose for it all. Right. Whatever, you know, this world could be, you know, we could all die tonight, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And none of this would exist anymore. And yet, you have to keep doing it because, like, what are you going to do? You know, literally, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Why waste it?
There's, you know, only so many things you can control. And, the way your boat's going is one of them, man, you know, and the way you interpret the world through your eyes is never going to be the same as somebody else's eyes or mine, because it's such a different, people are just, you know, so unique, you know, it's fucking crazy shit. And I don't know. It's mind blowing to think about and to get into this shit, but like, I have to do it. I mean, you just have to do it, you know, it's like you have to eat, you have to feed yourself, or were you going to just like be depressed and fucking, you know, I don't know, do what? I can't. That's not even a pod, like a thought, you know. It's just shit that you have to do. You have to fucking take, you know, your time to like do your shit, man.
You have an almost Buddhist sort of acceptance of the horrible, though. It seems to me like a very Eastern way of looking at it anyway, because, you know, I'm culturally Catholic. I grew up Catholic. So my first instinct, and no wonder I'm a depressive, but my first instinct is always to ruminate and to rue and to dwell.
It's easy to do that. That's like, you know, a way to keep people, you know, you know, docile, you know, is to, to be, it's hard not to be, you know, to look back at things that you've done, you know, the past. It's hard not to do that, especially when you get to be older, you know, and you see like the young people and all that shit, but like, I don't know, you can't get anywhere of like trying to live in the past and, accepting the world changes is something that everybody has to come to terms with, you know?
You seem to be doing it incredibly well, though. The fact that you can even, like, state it in that manner and you know, kind of power through and still carry any sort of lightness of being, I have to kind of applaud that too, because that's an incredibly difficult state of mind to like harness and take through your life. That's It's pretty awesome, man.
Thanks, man. I mean, you know, it's easy to like bitch about shit, but like, you know, you could be, you know, trying to scramble for your life in some fucked up place, you know. It's just life's fucking precious, and you know, every life matters in some way, even the fucked up racist people, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I don't want to kill anybody, you know what I mean? I don't want anybody to get hurt ever, but like, that shit happens, man, and it sucks. And unfortunately, that's just the nature of human people, you know? It's just like the human people. The human beings are just like every, you know, every civilization's founded on blood, man, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So I guess, you know, hopefully we'll figure that out one day.
I hope we will, and I think we will. But in the time being, we need more people like yourself who feel that way, and you don't just feel it, but you're doing something about it, and you're putting something into the ether. You're actually, you know, making music. You're doing things with intention that have an inherently positive sheen to them, that can rally more people and you know, maybe impart that wisdom on them, you know? Wow. And that's a very, very beautiful undertaking. So I appreciate you for that, my friend.
Fucking A, man. Thanks, dude.
All right, my friend. I've kept you for an hour. This has been fantastic. I hope I get to see you out on tour. And
yeah, definitely. What part of Philly, Pennsylvania are you in?
The Scranton area of Pennsylvania. The Kentucky part of Pennsylvania. But, you know, you've been through this general area before with planes. I hope you bring this road show through this way. If not, I'll catch you in Philly. It's only 2 hours away.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it, man.
Have a
good night. Take it easy.
You too.
Well, folks, there you have it. My discussion with Chuck French. I love Chuck. He is incredible. I love every band he's ever been in, and I'm not just saying that. Woven Hand is an institution. 16 Horsepower before them were an institution, but Woven Hand is the type of group that you can easily become obsessed with. As is Planes Mistaken for Stars, as is Get Some. This music is all so expressive and unique, vibrant, psychedelic, and introspective in all of their own separate rights. I really hope you all enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed making it. We only have a couple episodes left of the season, leading up to the Halloween special, and then right into Book 3. That's right, we're almost done with Season 2. We're on to the third year of this show, and I absolutely cannot believe it. I'm so excited for you to hear what we have coming next. Take care, everyone. And as always, he's been Chuck. I've been Peter. You've been beautiful. And this has been the Book of Very, Very Bad Things podcast. From 3:33 a.m. Studios, I bid you a good evening.